strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, appreciate you spending some time here. I want to read a quote very quickly. The severity of our teacher shortage requires multiple strategies, and now our state has another tool in our toolbox to address this crisis. That's Kathy Hoffman, our superintendent of public schools. There is a new residency program, much like doctors go through. It's a two-year program, and the Arizona Teacher Residency will offer this program through NAU. First year, students in the classroom, I should say these teachers, potential teachers in the classroom. Second year, they'll be in front of the class to get hands-on experience in front of a class. I think this is a fantastic idea. Running this is Kathy Webke, serves as the director of the Arizona K-12 Center, and she joins us now. Ms. Webke, how is it different from the Teachers Academy that exists already?
Well, the Arizona Teachers Academy is a funding mechanism for students who want to be teachers in a traditional teacher preparation program at any one of our state universities. So those students that are in those programs, when they enter, they take their coursework, and typically they'll have practicum experiences throughout the coursework and spend the last semester student teaching. So it has a very narrow band of time where students are in classrooms. This residency, the residents or students already have their college degree, so they're basically going back to get a master's degree in education, and from day one, they are going to be working side by side with an exemplary classroom teacher in their resident year, and by year two, they will be in a classroom. So I would say it's a much more intensified experience, both from a coursework standpoint, but definitely in that practical in-classroom experience.
And now in medical residency, doctors usually choose what specialty they're going to go into based on, you know, the different rounds they get to make in a residency. Is that the way it is here, or do most of these teachers already know and get paired up with teachers in the discipline or in the grade level or in the subjects they're going to teach?
We're going to start with elementary school classrooms and hope to quickly branch out to high school and rural Arizona. There are going to be different experiences with the residences within the residency. They might spend the first part of the year in a typical, let's say, third grade classroom, and maybe the second semester maybe in a special ed classroom or maybe middle school science. It really will, I think, what we want to do is capitalize on the needs of the local school district who's partnering with us, as well as the interests of the resident.
Is this being done successfully? I apologize for my ignorance. Is this being done anywhere else in the country?
Yes, actually, I believe in probably 30 cities and states across the United States. This has been done very successfully, and the results are tremendous. Teachers that graduate from a residency program typically stay longer in the profession. They have a much better retention rate, and their students in those classrooms do exceptionally well.
So how are the teachers that will be the mentors, how are they chosen in this program?
So we will be working with the local school districts. Who do they think should the residents be placed with? We're going to be seeking community feedback and parent feedback as well. Like, who's that teacher that you really think is something spectacular? And we want to put our residents in those classrooms. So we're hoping that, obviously, the school leadership will have a say in it, but also the community and parents as well, and students.
Kathy Webke is joining me. She is the executive director of the Arizona K-12 Center. And this program is, when will this be kicked off? How quickly can it be kicked off?
Right now we're working on the application process, but we hope to have the application available by winter, early part of 2022, where people can apply to become residents. They will be identified by spring because we will kick it off with a summer institute in July of 2022, and they will be in classrooms and when school starts, depending on when the start date is of the individual district.
How many of these residents can you accommodate in the first year?
We are targeting 30 residents and hope to grow to 100 residents by year five.
Wow, that's a lofty goal. This kind of ingenuity in education, I think, is so necessary, that finding new ways to get people excited about teaching. You know, teachers need to be paid more, but it's a calling for so many people. Getting these young people excited about the career seems like such a great way to do this.
I couldn't agree more. I was a teacher. I was a classroom teacher here in Arizona. I was born and raised here, and I taught for almost 18 years. And the comments that I made yesterday, it was because of my second grade teacher, Mrs. Mack, that I decided that I, too, wanted to be a teacher. She left an indelible mark on my life and just really took a genuine interest in me as a student and in my family. And unfortunately, we just don't have enough people that want to be teachers. And so we're hoping that this will be the spark plug that ignites some people. I think oftentimes when we graduate from college, we're not 100% sure what we want to be. And I do think that there's a group of people out there that really want to make a difference. And I can't think of a better way to make a difference in a community and in a state than by being a teacher.
Yeah, I agree with you. And much like the medical profession, having someone that's been there so that you can help you with the stress of the job and the things that maybe you didn't realize are going to happen, where it's either going to affirm for you that this is exactly what you want to be doing, or maybe even weed out people that aren't necessarily cut out for the job.
Yeah, and I think that that's true. And I think being able to work side by side in the classroom, because every job has its high points and low points, and helping a person navigate that, I think, is tremendous. And I think the partnership, the Arizona K-12 Center is part of Northern Arizona University, and we provide professional learning experiences for teachers across Arizona. So the fact that we are launching this, these residents not only will have the opportunity to go through this incredible program and receive a master's degree from Northern Arizona University, at the same time, they'll also have access to quality professional learning as they enter that career. What I want teachers to know, what I want people to know, is just when you become a teacher, your learning doesn't stop. It just continues. You're a lifelong learner when you're a teacher.
I thank you so much for your time this morning, and I would love to hear more about this as it kicks off. I'd love for you to come on and talk to the audience, because I think it's going to be remarkable.
Thank you so much for having me today, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. That's Kathy Webke, and I think this program is exactly what Arizona needs. And what I love about this is it's a solution. It's working toward a solution. And, you know, we can have our differences about things in education, and all of us do, but trying to get people excited about the profession and getting them in classrooms with qualified teachers to kind of show them the ropes in their first couple of steps in the career sounds like a win for everyone involved. So I think this is going to be terrific. In a moment, we're going to talk about Senator Sinema. Senator Sinema was again confronted in an airport, but what they're confronting her about, and this is climate change. But I want to talk about what the confrontation overall is about, and it has to do with tax and spend. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a moment. Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with me. Senator Kyrsten Sinema found herself in another precarious position. I want you to hear a little bit of this. They are coming after her because of her stance now, I guess lack of stance, on climate change this time. So she was confronted in an airport by someone, and I think the senator handles these things as best she can. But here's what happened.
I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
I think it's quite interesting.
I know you've met with dozens of lobbyists. I did not touch you. I mean, I know you've met with dozens of lobbyists.
The world doesn't really work.
Talking with corporate donors about the package. How many times will you meet with constituents?
Well,
how many times have you met with constituents when negotiating bills?
Sorry about this.
So that's just a little bit of it. She's apologizing to whoever she's walking with in the airport. This has become an issue now where if you are not doing what someone wants, they get in your face. The behavior is not good, and I don't think it's working for them. But what's at the core of the problem that people are having with Senator Sinema, and I want you to hear a little bit of what she said with Gatos and Chad the other day. She was on with Gatos and Chad, and I thought it was a fabulous interview. It was on Friday. And what she is looking for when it comes to economic growth and taxation.
Okay. Everyone knows I'm a fiscal conservative, and I told President Biden and Senator Schumer that I will protect Arizona jobs from federal policies that would negatively impact our economic competitiveness. I'm looking for tax policies that are fair and that are equitable, and importantly, that retain our competitiveness at the national and international level. And so that's the eye that I'm looking at tax policies for. I'm looking for policies, and will only support policies that maintain and grow our economic competitiveness.
Biden's approval rating has hit a low in the 538 tracker. He's at like 43% is where it stood at. His disapproval rating stood at 50.6. Right now, his approval rating is just over 43. So the Biden approval rating is plummeting like a stone because things are getting more expensive for all Americans. And this is where America has gotten off track. I do believe we are way too emotional about politics because we treat politics like we do sports. I get emotionally invested, as many of you do. I've joked around on the air about being a Miami Hurricane. I love Miami Hurricanes football. I've been a fan since the 70s when Howard Schnellenberger was there. For a multitude of reasons, it's very personal for me because of my brothers and the connection our family has connected to Miami Hurricanes football. So when they're playing as poorly as they're playing right now, they had a big win on Saturday, but when they're playing poorly like they are this season, it's an emotional feeling for me. What I love about going to the Cardinals games is it's an emotional experience. This is an easy team to get connected to. To watch J.J. Watt in that now very famous sideline video where he said, maybe we're just better. Stop making excuses for why we win. Maybe we're just better. Every fan can connect to that, and they love it. That's why we love sports. But we've done the same thing with politics. We get so emotionally invested in one person or one party that we can't let go. We almost feel like we're cheating if we disagree. The majority of Americans are not connected politically like that, just like the majority of people are not connected to football like that. Go to a Super Bowl party. You go to a Super Bowl party, there are people that only watch the commercials at a Super Bowl party. There are people that show up that don't even watch the game. They stay in another room and talk. You know, so we have to kind of get outside of the bubble that we're in. And the policies of this administration are damaging the very people that they want to help. I can back that up with inflation alone. The idea that what they're going to do and their tax plan, and this is the part where I'm talking about the confrontation with Senator Sinema, is she's not backing a $3.5 trillion plan, the taxation of billionaires, of not only money that they make, but assets that they have and potential money that they might make, all of those things, unrealized assets or unrealized income, whatever you want to call it. The idea that we're going to go after the rich and somehow improve the lives of the poor is such an old and tired argument. You look at the progress of how wealthy the nation of Venezuela has been. You look at just 30 years ago where Venezuela was as far as being one of the wealthiest countries in the hemisphere. And as soon as they elected a socialist president, they fell off a cliff economically. Socialized medicine, nobody gets medical care there. Nobody has any money. People fight over garbage. You look at communist countries. Name one that's super wealthy. Name one. The Chinese economy, they have the haves and the have-nots, but it's tied to politics, not hard work or opportunity. What we are doing with this tax and spend idea, and there are a lot of people that still believe this plan is very popular. Why shouldn't we? You know, we just found out that Elon Musk from Tesla is worth 200 and something billion dollars. And there's American families that won't be able to afford Thanksgiving dinner. All of those things are what's being said. But what's fascinating about it, what I find more fascinating about this than anything else, is you explain to me how decimating the wealth of one person ever has translated into helping somebody else's life. It hasn't. You're not going to make a poor person wealthy by making a wealthy person poor. It's not going to happen. And there are greedy people that are wealthy. There's no doubt. Anybody out there that's trying not to pay anything in taxes and they're paying zero, I agree with you. That's shameful. But again, if we want to make it fair, everybody pays a percentage, which means there are people that are not paying any taxes at all right now that aren't billionaires are going to start paying something. And when we start looking at it that way, I think people's minds are changed because people are interested in politics. Everyone has an opinion of the direction this country should go economically, socially, spiritually. Everyone has an opinion. A lot of people don't engage because they don't want to get into the ugly waters of politics. They don't want to deal with political parties in the way that they have pitted each other against themselves. And what we're seeing right now is this hate the rich mentality. Biden is immensely unpopular because of the results. I don't think it's because of his policies yet. I think unless somebody comes along or a group of people can come along that can explain why the policies have led to the results, that's when big changes happen. You know, we talked about Thanksgiving. I'm sure we'll talk about it again before the show is over. Last year's Thanksgiving was the cheapest since 2010. this year's Thanksgiving is going to be the most expensive in history. That tells you a lot about how we've changed in 12 months economically. Coming up in a moment, vaccine mandate madness. We're going to talk about the vaccine mandates and how far it's gone. Next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the Mike Broomhead Show. The idea of mandates has got people uproared across the country. We know that in New York City, the police and firefighters walking across the Brooklyn Bridge, thousands of people protesting mandates. There are walkouts happening. We know that police officers in Tucson. We know that other jurisdictions where cops are leaving the profession. States like Florida are recruiting. States like Indiana are saying to Chicago police departments, come join us. But it's not just public safety. This is affecting the workforce across the country. Doctors are saying that the shortage of nurses and doctors and medical professionals is going to really be bad for patient care. Well, here in Arizona, we've got some major corporations in the defense industry, and we have Boeing is a local company. They are here in the state of Arizona. And what's kind of flown under the radar for some people is that Boeing employees have been protesting a vaccine mandate. And I want to clarify, being anti-mandate does not make you anti-vaccine. Myself included, I am fully vaccinated, but I am dead set against mandating things for people. Does this have to do with the Biden administration? Does this weaken the Arizona economy? What does this do for our economy if we slow down or stop work at Boeing? So joining us right now is Robert Aker, a Boeing employee, talking about these protests. First of all, Robert, give us the reason why, who organized this, and why are Boeing employees walking out?
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking our call. Basically, we had two employees, John and Mark, who once this mandate came out, they just came out to the street and they just stood up by themselves until others started crowding, you know, joining the resistance, I guess you could say. But one thing I love about it is everybody here who's standing up, they love their job. They love what they do. They like the company they work for. They like their managers. They just can't stomach a mandate, a medical mandate.
Do you believe that the company is only doing this because it's a mandate from the Biden administration? Do you think they would do this if it weren't for a mandate from the federal government?
So they put out an email, and I can send it to you later, that said, due to the executive order, and they put a link out, which went right to the White House's website. Now, as you know, a website is not an executive order. When further pressed, I still haven't found what that executive order that would be contained information. They have given me a couple of executive orders. I think it's 14042 and 14043, but none of it can come close to explaining what this is for. But they are listing the executive order as the reason for the mandate.
How many employees right now are walking out of the building, and what areas of Boeing is it affecting?
So Boeing Mesa is kind of a growth location. The cost of employment here is better, I guess, than California and other states. And so they're growing. I think they have about a little over 4,000 people here. The people walking out, some are maybe calling in sick. Others are joining us, and others are making their opinions heard in the factory. So the sizes, the crowd sizes are not representative necessarily of those who are kind of pushing back on every level they can.
Is it affecting production? Is it affecting work at Boeing?
So I'm not in that factory. What I have heard is that it has affected to some degree. I mean, we wish no harm on the company, but if we're going to lose our job December 8th, Merry Christmas, I mean, what else are we supposed to do?
Have you had any contact with management about this? Have they made any comment to you or toward you regarding what's happening?
Yeah, so I started asking questions. My manager was actually pretty responsive, and he didn't know, so he grabbed HR to come chat with us. And HR, I mean, the company is quite a bit doubling down on this December 8th. If you're not 14 days after receiving your immunity or your shots, that you will be put on, I think what they explained was a unpaid leave. So, I mean, they're pretty clear about what their expectations are.
Robert Aker is joining me. He's a Boeing employee. What is your role in this? Are you an organizer? Are you the spokesperson? Are you just someone that happened to be you got in touch with? What's your role in all of this?
So all of us, most of us have never actually protested anything. But my role is, once we saw these heroes out here, these patriots standing up, I mean, we just started coming together. I may be able to speak a little bit on the phone, but others, everybody has their own role. So I'm just helping out some of the core team here, just making our voice heard.
How far are you willing to go? Like you said, you think you're may lose your job anyway or be put on unpaid leave. How long are you willing to stand out there? How long are you willing to do this?
We have people out here every day, 7 to 4, until we have no job. So we will have people out here. I mean, join us if you can, at Higley McDowell, in person. Feel the energy. Like I said, we have people driving at least an hour one way to come be with us. So we appreciate everybody. But we're committed to freedom.
And are you, and I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that the frustration, I don't think that the Biden administration understood the pushback that they were going to get from people, even organized labor, you know, those strong labor unions. And this is not a political issue with partisan issue. We're seeing Trump supporters alongside Black Lives Matter supporters saying that these mandates are not going to stand.
So you're 100% right. I mean, if you have the shot and don't want forced medical decisions, I mean, we're together with you. I mean, we support you in whatever decision you want to make for your medical decisions in your life and your doctor. But I mean, hopefully we can come together on this and more of it than just a political, you know, right versus left argument.
And so is that what you'd say you're looking for? You're looking for a repeal of this mandate from your company?
Yes. All of us want to do our job, and we're normally listed as high performers. So we would love to go back to doing our job.
Robert, I appreciate the time. I know we kind of called you on short notice, and if you don't mind, we're going to stay in touch with you because I'd like to see as the days go on if you start getting recognized by management, if there's any movement on their part.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks. That's Robert Aker from Boeing out in the East Valley. They are standing up, and there's people that are walking out. As you heard him say, it started with two people that walked outside and just stood there by themselves until others started to join them. So there are groups of people that are standing outside the facility for recognition. There are those that are calling in sick. There are those that are going into work and making their feelings known to management on the inside. So it's now Boeing. You're seeing, you know, defense contractors, you know, what they build as far as aerospace or as far as, you know, aircraft goes. We all know that company. But how does that affect if their productivity is affected? What does that do to the Arizona economy? But how about all of these hardworking people in a specialized industry? It's not like you can just, you know, switch these people out. They're a specialized industry. And we're watching people that are being forced, as he said, forced medical protocol, forced medical care. And he said, if you've been fully vaccinated, we stand with your right to choose that. But it's someone's right to choose. We're going to see who blinks on this, because the big concern, one of the other stories in front of me, doctors across the country, including some right here in Arizona, are warning the Biden administration that there is going to be compromised medical care because of these mandates, because there are some medical professionals that will not back down. They'll seek employment somewhere else where the mandate doesn't stand. And so, again, I am fully vaccinated. But I just believe that these mandates are un-American. I hate them. And I get emails from people all the time that talk about seatbelt laws and all of these other things and requirements. This is something that I am not alone in, that there are many people like me that say you have a right to choose what's right for you. In a moment, a quick immigration update. What is happening? Because there are people that are in Mexico, southern Mexico, that are upset that they're not getting the asylum they want. So I'll tell you about what they're going to do next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Coming up just after 11 o'clock this morning, we are going to talk about the COVID update. There are new numbers here in Arizona. First responders being infected at a much higher rate than even other medical workers, frontline workers. So we'll talk about that. And of course, did you hear this? Happens at 11:15. Congressman Andy Biggs is going to join me tomorrow. We're also going to be joined tomorrow by the police chief in the city of Phoenix. We're going to have Chief Jerry Williams will join us on the show tomorrow to talk about recruiting and policing in the city of Phoenix. So tomorrow's going to be a big day on the show as well. Immigration arrests inside the United States have plummeted. Immigration arrests within the United States are the lowest level in over 10 years. This from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Now, I want to take you back a little bit. If you remember, we had a decision made by the Obama administration, and it was an interpretation of our laws about asylum and unaccompanied minors. And what was happening was families south of our border, I think led by the cartels, because the cartels are the ones making all of this money. They were informed that if you have an unaccompanied minor that comes to the U.S., we are not going to turn them around and send them back across the border. We're going to find them sponsor houses. We're going to get them lawyers. We're going to give them hearings. And the backlog was years, well over a year. So we saw an influx of tens of thousands of unaccompanied children during that administration. Who was the vice president during that time? Our president now. This is something he is very familiar with, which is important to remember as we go on with this story. So now we are seeing the worst problem at our border as far as illegal immigration goes that we have ever seen. This president was involved in the exact same scenario as the vice president. He's got experience in this. So this is either intentional or he is just terrible with policy on the border. So we are seeing arrests plummet, which is sending the message to people that if you come here, you're not going to be arrested. There has been a policy shift in the midst of this uprising of people that are coming here that says we are not going to arrest people simply because they're in this country illegally. That's another message that's been sent south. So tired of waiting for asylum in southern Mexico, thousands of migrants march north. So many of these people coming from Honduras, coming from other Central American countries, said I was trying to do the right thing and I waited and waited for all my papers and they never helped me. So I decided to join the caravan out of fear. This woman's name is Castillo, is one of several thousand who, desperate for work and fleeing poverty and violence, decided to march out of the border city. But the contingent pushed through. They continued their trek on Sunday, hoping eventually to reach Mexico City. And then most of them are coming on to the U.S. And so the Biden administration is on notice. Texas is right now preparing for another group of thousands of people to cross into the United States. How many of those people will divert into Arizona? It's a problem for all of us. There are issues that can be handled. I will tell you that the mayor of Mesa is talking about an expedited pathway to citizenship for people so that they can work here. Well, I would say I would disagree in just a small degree in this way. I would say that a guest worker program for people, give them the ability to work before we jump to citizenship. And the reason why I say that is this. We cannot treat people that have broken the law the same as we treat people that have obeyed the law. It doesn't work in normal society. It doesn't. You pay a penalty, you pay a price, and we give you a second chance. But you're not treated the same. And what you've seen happen here, what we're seeing happen now, is we're creating the next generation of dreamers. I am convinced of that as much as I'm convinced about anything else. We have not solved the problem as a nation of what to do with the dreamers. We haven't done that yet. And yet we have more and more unaccompanied minors. Rec was 125,000 coming across the border. What we must do is we must come up with a real American solution. I don't think we're going to send the dreamers back to the countries they came from. But at the same time, and I will tell you, I know this is not a popular thing to say, but I will say this to you. If you've come to the country legally and you have children and you live in Arizona, your children are state residents and they should get in-state tuition. If you've come here illegally, why would your child get in-state tuition anywhere? Now, and I'll explain why. If at the very beginning of all of this, let's say there are parents now that have been here, their children have grown from babies to college age. If you had told them when they crossed the border into the U.S., here's the deal. We're going to let you come into the United States and jump the line. You can put down roots, you can get jobs, and you can educate your children in American schools. And your children can assimilate and become Americans for better or for worse. But when they reach college age, they are not going to get in-state tuition anywhere in the country. They're going to have to pay out-of-state tuition wherever they go to college. I don't think that there is a parent that wouldn't agree to that program and say that that's a fair trade-off. And so for the families that came here the right way, the separated families that came here and did it the right way, getting the full benefit is one thing. But why we cannot afford the full benefit of citizenship, and not just protection under the Constitution, but some of the benefits of living here, with whether it's tuition decreases or programs, there's got to be some penalty for coming here illegally. And I think it's a fair trade-off. I'm not a cruel person. I'm not a heartless person. I believe in legal immigration. But there has got to be something that sends the message. If you come here illegally, there are going to be consequences. And we aren't doing any of that right now. We're not turning people away. We're not arresting people. We're not doing the right thing. And we need to. We desperately need to. COVID-19 and first responders, a much higher rate of infection among street-level first responders, cops, and firefighters. I'm going to talk about the whys about that and more on COVID coming up next.